Welcome to episode 40. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VIJA. I'm starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, which continues to make its way through the enterprise bargaining process. There is a meeting this week of the community health subgroup on the 19th of October. That's a group that's been put together for the purpose of developing a response to the logs of claim that have been served on community health. That committee is comprised of volunteers. If anyone else wishes to volunteer for that particular group, please contact VIJA. With regards to our health service members, we continue to bargain with the AMA. In addition to the twice-weekly meetings, on the 17th of October, we met with a small group of chief medical officers and directors of medical services to develop responses to some of the items of claim. And on the 18th, we developed and presented an update on the DIT bargaining to HMO managers at the Postgraduate Medical Council of Victoria's monthly meeting. Our thanks to them for hosting us. The AMA is hosting a member meeting on the 19th of October. We can expect a shift in their rhetoric following that meeting. With regards to the other groups, the Nurses and Midwives Agreement in particular, on the 19th of October, VHA will be hosting the Nurses and Midwives Reference Group. For general dentists and dentist specialist bargaining, VHA met with representatives from Professionals Australia on the 16th of October to progress bargaining of those agreements. For dental therapists, we're meeting with the CPSU on the 18th of October to progress bargaining for dental therapists, hygienists and oral health therapists and their new agreement. With regards to a new group that we've established, that's the Payroll Reference Group. Its first meeting is on the 12th of October. The purpose of that reference group will be to speak to them and determine how it is we can provide better services to that group. First of all, starting off with a small working group and then taking their advice to provide a regular scheduled catch-up with payroll more broadly in future. That's really to ensure that payroll get an opportunity to have input into the bargaining process at the front end rather than just at the implementation end. And finally, with regards to allied health professionals, we have a meeting of our allied health professionals reference group scheduled for the 19th of October. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is the Manager of Workplace Relations Services and recently crowned sole survivor, Tim Nagel. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be here.
Tim, would you be good enough to reveal the clue that will reveal this week's subject for discussion?
Sure.
So for the benefit of those people who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, would you be good enough to describe what it is you see in terms of the clue?
The table.
Tim, that's a terrible answer, and you couldn't be more wrong. In order to find this week's clue, we actually have to travel back in time. Tim, you'll have to take my word for it and just accept that sometime in the future I'll ask you what this clue is and what it means in terms of this week's subject for discussion. For the benefit of those people who are listening rather than watching, could you describe what the clue is?
It's a book entitled A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking.
And on the basis of the clue, what would you say is the subject for our discussion today?
Time in lieu.
That's a nice try. In fact, one of the better tries, I think, that you've attempted, but still so wrong. Tim, obviously this refers to short shifts. The subject for today's discussion is short shifts, in particular under the Nurses and Midwives Agreement. But we'll also be looking back at the history of those particular provisions just to see how it is that they've evolved from one agreement to the next.
So is this a new clause, or has it been in the old agreements as well?
So it comes from the previous agreement, but there have been some changes, which is really the point of this particular discussion. So the 2012 Nurses and Midwives Agreement had a provision that pertained to short shifts at Clause 52. But just to ensure that it was as difficult as possible, we didn't call it a short shifts clause. We referred to it as a specific shift length provision clause. And what that did is it set out the circumstances under which a short shift could be worked. However, during the life of the agreement, there were some disputes with regards to the operation of that provision, and the amendments that have been made to that clause into the new agreement have really been designed to deal with those issues.
So to start at the beginning, what is a short shift under the agreement?
The first thing to realise, Tim, is that a short shift refers to the length of the shift and not the height of the person performing it.
I imagine that's a common misunderstanding.
It is.
So in terms of working short, it's not a reference to people's height?
Not at all. Working short commonly refers to not having enough people on. In contrast, a short shift refers to the length of the shift.
And just in terms of that, is short shift defined within the agreement?
Yeah, absolutely it is. So if we go to Clause 47, and for those people who are listening and watching, if they turn to Clause 47 of the agreement, that's where they'll find the provisions about short shifts. And when you go through that provision, the very first subclause talks about a definition for the term short shift, and it in turn refers you back to Clause 4 of the agreement.
And why not just simply define short shift in Clause 47?
It goes to the practice that we've developed with regards to these agreements, where if there's a term that applies in more than one clause, what we've tried to do is define all of those terms up the front of the agreement at Clause 4. And that's where you'll find the definition with regards to short shift.
And what does the definition in Clause 4 say?
So if you go to Clause 4.1 LL, it defines a short shift as being of 6 hours of duration, excluding a meal break.
So 6 hours, does that mean 6 hours is the shortest shift that's allowable under the agreement?
Yeah, that's a great question. So not exactly is the best answer I can give to that. Short shifts have a particular context in terms of filling a gap within a roster, but not all nursing occurs in a ward setting. Mm. There are nurses who perform outside of that kind of setting, and other shift lengths are possible. And for example, the minimum engagement period for a casual nurse is 2 hours. Yeah. As such. But what we're really talking about when we're talking about a short shift is in the context of a roster, really for that kind of 24/7 or that ward setting.
So we've established what a short shift is and the context that it's used in. What else does Clause 47 say?
So we move then to Subclause 2. And Subclause 2 is in the form of a general prohibition, and it prohibits the use of short shifts for night duty.
So it's as broad as that?
It is. It simply says that short shifts shall not be utilised on night duty.
And the use of the term utilised, does that have any significance?
Yeah, it does. So one of the issues that came up with the previous agreement was the use of a term like rostered. And rostered denotes where something is being planned to be used as opposed to simply be used at all. So the reason for using a term like utilised, it's intended to be broader. Whether it's something that's appeared and planned in the roster, or whether it is simply deployed during that period of time, it's seeking to cover both those things.
So, in fact, used in any sense?
That's correct. So, Subclause 3 goes on then to set out a range of circumstances in which a short shift can be used.
And what does Subclause 3 say?
Well, the first thing to note with regards to Subclause 3 is it begins by identifying the fact that there are some limited exceptions, and those exceptions are dealt with at Subclauses 5, 7 and 8, of Clause 47, and we'll come to those in due course, but it then states that up to 2 short shifts may be used for a ward or unit per day, where a number of limits are not exceeded, and 3 limits are basically set, the first of which is that there is one short shift used in the AM shift, that is during the morning shift, one during the PM shift, that is the afternoon shift, or one that crosses over between those 2 shifts.
So what's a crossover shift I heard you refer to?
Yeah, so a crossover is one that's neither morning or afternoon. It starts after midday and finishes... before midday and finishes sometime after the afternoon shift has commenced. So it spans both the morning and afternoon shift.
And why does it say and slash or?
So it has those 3 options. But you'll recall that we talked about the fact that there is a limit in terms of the number of short shifts that can be used per day in a unit of being 2. So you can't use all 3 on a particular day. You can use 1 or 2 of them in that kind of confined way.
And I note that you used the term used. We talked about utilised before. Does it have the same broad implication?
Yeah, it does. So again, it's in contrast to a word like rostered.
Are there exceptions to that? So, for example, is it possible to have multiple short shifts on the morning shift?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So the way that the Clause 47 reads is that you are limited to using one short shift in the morning and or one in the afternoon and or one as a crossover. But there is a limited exception in Clause 93, which we'll come to separately.
So subclause 3 limits the use of short shifts and the number of short shifts that could be utilised?
Correct.
How about subclause 4?
What that deals with is that short shifts can only be used by agreement. And what it states is that a person won't be rostered to work a short shift unless the employee agrees to work them.
So the employee agrees to work them. Can they also withdraw that agreement?
Yeah, they can. And this was a gap that was in the previous agreement. It didn't. It talked about the fact that agreement was necessary. It didn't go to the issue of what happens in the event that agreement is no longer in place, that agreement is withdrawn. So what the new provision does is it talks about an employee ceasing by giving 28 days notice to the employer that they wish to work the full shift lengths, and the arrangement will cease in the next roster, or if that's already been posted, then in the roster after that.
So the shift that was a short shift then becomes an ordinary shift?
That's one possibility, but it's not the only possibility. So it may well be that there are very good, sound reasons for a particular shift to be a short shift. And under those circumstances, the employee and employer would need to engage with each other to figure out how it is that that request could be accommodated. It could be simple, such as swapping shifts with another person, or it could be quite challenging. But what the subclause also makes clear, though, is that where somebody withdraws their agreement to participate in that short shift in terms of being rostered, it doesn't unilaterally vary the contract of employment.
And what does that mean?
It means that it doesn't extend a 20-hour contract per week to a 22-hour contract simply as a result of the withdrawal of that agreement.
So we've addressed a couple of things in that, so what a short shift is, when short shifts can be used, when they can be used, and the fact that they can only be rostered by agreement and that such agreement can be withdrawn. What does subclause 5 deal with?
Yeah, so subclause 5 is headed replacement of rostered shifts, and it goes to the issue of using short shifts in that particular circumstance. That is where the employer is replacing a rostered shift because, for example, somebody calls in sick.
So what does the clause say about the replacement of short shifts with longer shifts?
Yeah, what it does is it sets out a series of considerations. But before we get to those considerations, subclause 5 refers to another provision within the agreement that's relevant in terms of replacing vacant shifts, and that's clause 45.7, which I'll come to shortly. The subclause begins, the employer will use a full shift to replace unplanned vacancies unless, after making a reasonable effort as described in clause 45.7, replacing unplanned vacancies, to fill a vacancy on the roster with a permanent employee, the employer must use a nurse bank employee or agency staff member. In that case, the employer will replace the unplanned vacancy with the full shift, except where the nurse in charge of the ward determines that a short shift will not have a negative impact on patient care, safe staffing and related matters, having regard to all the circumstances within the ward or unit, including a range of matters that are then listed. And the matters that are then listed, in some respects, are a statement of the obvious, but it's useful to articulate them in the agreement. Mm. And they include patient safety, staff mix, the time at which the absence was notified, whether the ward or unit is staffing above the ratios of the Safe Patient Care Act, the number of short shifts on the ward, the nature of the professional development being provided by the employer, and we'll explain that in a bit more detail shortly, the capacity for employees to attend professional development, and whether there is any prearranged education for casual staff.
Mm. There's a lot in that subclause.
Yeah, there is.
So it starts by saying that the employer will use a full shift to replace unplanned vacancies.
Mm.
So that's the start.
Element number one.
Unless, after making a reasonable effort as described at subclause 45.7, to fill a vacancy on the roster with a permanent employee, the employee must use nurse bank or agency staff members.
Yeah, that's right. So it really takes us to subclause 45.7.
Yeah.
Subclause 45.7 states that if there's a vacancy in the roster, You'll make a reasonable effort to fill that vacancy with a permanent employee for the same length of shift as the one that's being replaced.
So that's the starting assumption.
That's right. And the subclause goes on to describe what constitutes a reasonable effort.
So what is a reasonable effort?
Well, you start by contacting the available nurses, including those on the supplementary roster.
Then what?
Well, if that doesn't work, then you try other nurses and midwives on the ward or unit, unless that would result in overtime.
So this isn't about encouraging staff to work double shifts?
Absolutely not. If that doesn't work, then trying to fill the vacancy using the permanent pool is the next step. And then the employer is required by Clause 45 to document its efforts. If the attempts to fill the shifts with permanent employees fails, then a casual or agency nurse or midwife can be used in accordance with Clause 47, which then in turn contemplates short shifts in specific circumstances.
Okay, so there's two things there, isn't there? There's firstly that if you're replacing a rostered shift with a short shift, that can only occur when you've tried to fill the vacant with a permanent employee.
Correct.
For the full shift.
That's right. And what it means is that using a short shift to replace a vacancy can't be the first port of call.
Yeah.
It can't be a policy that you will always replace, for example, an absence with a short shift.
And that was one of the issues during the negotiations that was raised, wasn't it?
That's correct. So it's really about your first port of call is to try and replace like with like.
Yeah.
But that there are some circumstances where it might be appropriate to use a short shift, but there are those considerations that must be worked through.
And the second point is that replacing a shift on the roster with a short shift can only be done with a casual agency nurse or midwife.
Yeah, so when we're in the context of replacement, it is confined to a casual or agency nurse, that's correct.
And so why distinguish between the permanent and the non-permanent, such as agency or casual?
So that was a really interesting part of our discussions. Where nurses are part of an 8-8-10 roster, you have effectively 26 hours of paid nursing time. For 24 hours of care, and that results in an overlap between the morning and afternoon shifts, which is quite a significant overlap. It extends well beyond simply just handover. But that time is used not just for handover, but also to undertake professional development activities. That's the purpose of that time. That's how it should be used. And whilst education for your staff is an investment, in the case of agency or casual staff, the same value may not be there. It may not be necessary, and that's the reason for the distinction.
So when you get down to a non-permanent staff member, such as a bank nurse or a agency nurse, it still is a full shift length unless the nurse in charge deems otherwise?
That's correct, and that's really to prevent that circumstance that we were talking about before, where there is a policy assumption that such vacancies would be replaced by short shifts. That's what it's seeking to prevent. It can't be assumed. It can only occur once the nurse in charge has worked through the considerations that are listed in that clause.
And so there, the circumstances are listed and also provide some examples.
And it's important to remember that the examples are exactly that. They're examples only.
Mm.
What it's requiring someone to do is to consider all the circumstances that are relevant to that particular ward or unit in making that decision.
So the subclause then talks about the considerations and also gives some examples?
And they are examples only, so it's not exhaustive. But so in considering whether a short shift is appropriate, the nurse in charge is considering patient safety, acuity, skill mix, the time that the absence was notified.
And what does that mean?
Yeah, look, that's a really practical consideration. When somebody says that they're not going to be able to come in for their shift, they should give at least 2 hours' notice. But it doesn't always happen. And the fact is, it's not always possible.
Yes, sir.
If we take an example, someone's just about to leave for work and one of their kids falls ill, throws up, then suddenly they're calling in sick rather than attending because they're taking carer's leave. As a result, you have an absence that doesn't have much in the way of notice attached to it. So you're looking to replace that shift at short notice.
And the clause identifies other considerations as well, doesn't it, such as whether the ward is above ratio, also whether there are other short shifts on that shift?
That's correct, and all of those are relevant.
It also refers to professional development.
Yeah, and that really goes to the point that we were discussing before. It's not just a case of whether the professional development is going to be relevant to the agency or casual nurse. It's really a question of what role that agency or casual nurse might have, for example, in supporting other nurses to be able to attend that education, or indeed whether the education is directed towards that cohort.
So when, after all that, the subclause states that nothing in this clause prevents an employer replacing an unplanned absence on the roster with a longer shift than a short shift, what does that mean?
Yeah, it means two things. Firstly, the nurse in charge will consider all of those factors, and there may be a sound reason for a short shift. But the clause doesn't mean that a short shift must be rostered or must be utilised in those circumstances. It's not mandatory. And the second thing is this. It's not a binary proposition. It's not a question of whether you get the short shift or the full shift. We made that point before about late notice, and it may well be that you can't get the full shift, but you can get 7 hours. And the clause is not intended to prevent you from getting more than 6 hours but less than the full shift if that's all you can get under the circumstances.
What about short shifts and ADOs and the interaction between the two?
Yeah, when we're talking about ADOs, we're instantly talking about full-time RNs and midwives and ENs who work a short shift. Subclause 6 of Clause 47 goes to that issue, and it makes the point that a short shift can't negatively impact on someone's capacity to accrue an ADO. That is, a person will still be entitled to accrue an ADO as though a full shift had been worked.
So early on we talked about exceptions to the general rule. We've dealt with an exception in the context of casual and agency staff and replacing vacancies. What about the other any other exceptions?
So subclause 7 is headed exception workload management proposal. And it states that you can roster short shifts beyond that limit, beyond the limits that are set in subsection 3, subclause 3. And that's the clause that caps it to 2 within a unit per day. Those limits can be exceeded where it forms part of an EFT neutral management workload management proposal that's implemented under clause 93 of the agreement. The same subclause expressly prohibits a workload management proposal utilising short shifts that isn't EFT neutral.
That's quite heavy reading in there, isn't it? So what's a workload management proposal under clause 93? What is that?
So just in terms of clause 93 and workload management proposals, you might remember that clause from its old name, clause 42.
Yes, that is the infamous clause 42.
It's a clause so controversial that it both had to change its number and change its name. It's effectively entered the agreement version of the witness protection scheme.
I hope we haven't compromised that program.
I'm not sure that anyone's watching. But just in case they are, it has been relocated from clause 42 to clause 93. And it's referred to now as proposals to very specific matters. I still like to think of it as the artist formerly known as clause 42.
And so what does clause 93 allow you to do?
So very briefly, and in this context, it does have other work to do, but in this context, it allows you to exceed the cap for short shifts through a proposal, so long as it's EFT neutral.
And EFT neutral, what does that mean?
Yeah, what that means is that you might utilise a greater number of short shifts, but you're not losing hours within that ward or unit. So it may well be that you use additional short shifts, but the hours that are created as a result of exceeding that cap are then sent back into that ward or unit and are still utilised.
I think we've seen examples of that in the field, haven't we?
Yeah, look, there are a couple of circumstances where that could be relevant. So we have had a circumstance previously where a member introduced a proposal under the old Clause 42 to introduce additional short shifts, but it was EFT neutral. They didn't lose those hours. And the reason that they utilised those additional short shifts is that identified within this particular ward that there were predictable workload peaks. And so what they did is that they assigned the short shifts to those peaks and just utilised all the hours still within that ward or unit. So it was just a way of matching workforce to the demand level.
And it sounds like something that should be encouraged.
It should. And the second circumstance where it could come up is in the context of a flexible work arrangement. It may well be that somebody wants to work a shorter shift because they have family responsibilities, for example, and it suits them to do so. But again, the same principles apply. Yes, those requests can be accommodated, but those hours need to still be spent within the ward. So if somebody moves to 6-hour shifts and they do 4 of those, then you're generating effectively a parcel of eight hours that should be then directed back into the unit.
Are there any other circumstances? It's the flexible working arrangement.
That really is the flexible working arrangement. So it's really just about those two.
Mm. Why would a nurse or midwife want a short shift as part of a flexible work arrangement? Is that...
It's interesting. So we were talking about the role of school pickup. Yeah. And for me, that's the most profound and obvious example. But there isn't a limitation as to the examples that might trigger that flexible work arrangement requirement. But it's just simply the one that might be the one that springs to mind most easily.
Is there any more to it than that, do you think?
There is. So Clause 93 has a lot to say and has a lot of requirements, but that might be a subject for a separate podcast.
And so that brings us to subclause 8. What does that say?
Yeah, so that's the last of our exceptions. And it's headed Exception Aged Care and Rehabilitation Units. In effect, it's a savings clause. What it says that aged care and rehabilitation units that as of 31st of March 2012 had short shift arrangements in place that exceed the limits that are set in Clause 47, they can use up to 3 short shifts per ward or unit in any configuration over the AM and PM shifts.
So the 31st of March 2012, that sounds like a familiar date.
It's just as well that we're capable of time travel. It is a very magical date, the 31st of March 2012. It was the date that used to be connected to the CWMA, that is the current workload management arrangement, under the previous agreement. So that date used to mean a lot for us, but we don't have CWMA anymore. The only time you see that date now is in the context of this provision, and which really operates in that savings context and also within the EN translation provisions.
So no more CWMA?
No more CWMA.
And if an aged care or rehabilitation ward didn't have an arrangement in place for more short shifts as of that magical date, what happens there?
If they didn't have it in place as of the 31st of March 2012, if they don't have a copy of Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time and can't arrange for time travel, then they're out of luck. Then the limits under Clause 47 will apply.
Well, look, thanks, Stuart, for taking us through short shifts.
Thank you, Tim, and thank you, Stephen Hawking.